So this is our Friday morning on how to create a mastermind, a masterclass, or a challenge for your own business. And so I'm coming to you today from Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I'm normally in the Columbus, Ohio area, but we are taking a hiking trip and we ended up a couple of days down in Chattanooga and we did all of the mountains down there. And now we're headed back to Gatlinburg and Mark doesn't know it yet and he's not in the room. So I can tell you, we're going to start the Appalachian Trail today, this afternoon. So he doesn't know that yet. That's going to be his little surprise. So anyway, we are talking about masterminds, masterclasses, and challenges. And in session one, we talked about our framework, what to name our actual challenge, and then what problem is it that we're solving. And then in session two, we talked about how to actually facilitate a mastermind and what platform we wanted to use. And we unanimously all like Zoom. So we're on Zoom again today. And so now this is session three of this series. And I want to talk a little bit about setting our price and VP offers. And then as we go on to session four, we'll talk about creating a landing page and how to do the invitations. And then finally, session five is... we're going to launch your very own mastermind and then follow up and test and measure all the results. And so that's what we want to talk about as far as creating your own mastermind, masterclass, or challenge. But then once we talk about price for a little bit today, we're going to segue over to Debbie and she's going to actually facilitate and practice. And she is using the book of John Maxwell, Everyone Communicates If You Connect. And so she'll be talking and using that book as her material today. So where we're headed and where we're going with this is once we go through, everyone gets a turn to actually facilitate. Then when we come back through again, everyone is going to choose their own subject to facilitate. They do not have to stick with the John Maxwell book, Everyone Communicates If You Connect. They can use their own material. And Mason is going to be up first. And he's going to be actually facilitating his own material when Debbie's five sessions come to a close and we start over again. So we're looking forward to that. And so I want to talk a little bit about pricing and VIP offers. Now, when you do a mastermind or a masterclass or a challenge, one of the tough decisions is, should I charge? And if so, how much am I going to charge? And how, you know, we get in later on and how to create that landing page and your invitation and all of that. But you have to decide, you know, back a session or two, you know, what are you going to name your challenge and what problem are you solving? And then what platform are you going to do it on? And now how are you going to set your price? You know, so what I like to do is I like to do five free sessions. And the reason that I like to do five free ones is I can work the bugs out, so to speak. I get to fumble around a little bit. You know, if I don't quite have my material in my mind exactly the way I want it, I can add to it. If something comes up in the discussion, I can say, oh, I forgot to put something in about that. And I can add to my material. I can take away if something seems to drag a little bit in the middle, I can take away a section if I need to and just kind of fine tune. It takes that first free five sessions to just fine tune what you're doing. And then once you're ready to go live with your own audience, you know, after you've done your practice run, then at that point you can start charging. But the folks that came along with you during that free one, they can be your founding members. And here's why that's so important. Once you have your founding members, see, they can come onto your paid mastermind and they bring energy to the conversation because they've already been through the five sessions with you and they can bring some energy to your actual discussion. So that's why it's important to do that. Now, the best way and easiest way to do a VIP offer is to have, you know, throw in some one-on-one coaching. If somebody wants to spend extra money for your actual mastermind or masterclass or challenge, and you can put your free recordings can go into the VIP ticket. You can have some coaching, one-on-one coaching calls in the VIP ticket. I recommend if you're going to do a workbook that you do the workbook for everyone, but it's you can always have some added value in that VIP ticket. So I encourage all of you go out there and click around on some offers. We all see them in Facebook. and click around in those offers and see what other folks are doing. See what value that they're doing that really appeals to you, that you would think to yourself, I would buy that. I would buy that. I would pay that to get the recordings. I would pay that to get the extra material. I would pay that to get the one-on-one coaching with that particular guru. So see what other folks are doing and what appeals to you as far as the VIP. And then you can, and again, you're going to play around with that as you go as well. So you're going to do a challenge or a masterclass or a mastermind. And every time you do it, it's going to get better and better because you're going to get more and more clarity about your topic the more you do it. But you have to start. So that's my recommendation, is to do your first one for free, then use those folks as your founding members so that they can bring energy to your calls down the road. So we want to offer on this particular call for folks to use us to practice. Even before you do your free one where you get, I'll say, your real clients, not that we're not real, but you practice on us. So jump on board and do a 5-session and kind of, perfect, how you look on camera. And now again, I'm coming to you from a hotel room in Gatlinburg. And so sometimes you just do what you got to do. However, like Debbie, she is using a virtual screen. I could do a virtual screen behind me. And I do that often. I have a condo in Florida. And when we travel down there, I do my virtual screen. It looks like I'm sitting in a coffee shop. And Mason, you have a virtual screen. And his virtual screen looks like he's sitting at the pool. I love it. It is very classic. So I love everything that we're doing. And so I just want to open it up to see if Debbie or Mason, if either of you have any comments or questions about pricing or VIP offers before we turn it over to Debbie to actually start her facilitating of today's topic. So any questions from the two of you about pricing or offers?
Not yet, but I can say, I think I got it covered until I come into that position.
I get it. Yep. You think it makes sense until you start to put it on paper and then you go, oh, I don't know what to put there.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand that.
And the other advantage of, like, for example, is when using virtual backgrounds is learning how to do it effectively. This one shows up pretty good. We had to do some practice even before we logged on today. Based on my lighting, I had a huge shadow right over here. So it's practiced that way. But as far as the pricing piece, I know that even I'm still learning about that, and I have the discomfort of who am I to charge anybody anything? There's a name for that. I forget what it's called. But where you'll
imposter syndrome.
Pardon?
Imposter syndrome.
Bingo. Yeah, what Kathy said. Imposter syndrome. So I know even for me, that's one of the things I still wrestle with just academically. Just academically how I would do that. So it's good to practice and discuss these things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So anyway, I do charge for my masterminds. And this, of course, is my free call. But then we have a mastermind on this where we get down in the weeds a little more. And it's called the same thing, how to create your mastermind, masterclass, or your challenge. And I actually created mine in a membership site. And so I prefer the membership site model because folks will just be with you for years and years and years. And you can actually build a base of passive income that way. So I prefer the membership model, but not everyone has that. But if there's a way that you can create a membership around your business, it will actually generate a base for you that will just live on for years. And then whatever else you're doing can be extra income, but that base becomes your passive income. So I want to, think on that. So I want to turn it over to Debbie now. And Debbie, go ahead and take it away on today's topic, the John Maxwell book, Everyone Communicates, You Connect.
Thanks, Kathy. That was great information for everyone. Even if you're not ready for it, at least you can get a base for trying to understand it. And I very jokingly say trying to understand it. But welcome everybody. Today we're doing chapter 3, and it's talking about the art of communicating with words. Remember, it's not just the ability to use the right words to create your message, but it's also using the other important components, which a lot of people don't think about. In the art of communicating beyond words, it requires the ability to bring four factors together: using the right words, the right emotion while also being convincing, and making the right visual impression. Well, this is simple for some, but then some days, or some people say, oh, that's too complicated. But it really isn't. It's being intuitive. And I looked up the word, the definition of intuitive, and according to the Cambridge Dictionary, intuitive being an adjective, it's based on feelings rather than facts or proof, such as an imperative or an intuitive approach. Most people have an intuitive sense of right and wrong. And it's also, the definition is able to know or understand something because of feelings rather than facts or proof. And I thought, you know, that's really a word that you will just jump over the top of, think mm-hmm. you know what it means, but by understanding, being intuitive will help you in this communication. So, and then John Maxwell in his book gives, he has the best advice is to learn how to be yourself. No matter your style, if you connect visually, intellectually, emotionally, and verbally, you will connect to your audience and they will remember you and how you made them feel. So I'm going to read an example that he uses in his book. And so think about this, because afterwards, I will ask you a question. Two managers work together running a restaurant. Now, we've all had experience working in a restaurant, I'm sure. All 20 employees work regularly for each of them. When the first manager needs extra help and asks people to work late, they do so willingly. But when the other manager makes the same appeal the next week, all the employees make excuses for why they can't stay. So in your opinion, what do you feel might be some of the reasons behind these employees looking at their manager and saying, you know? So Mason, what do you think?
It's the culture he's created. The way the manager creates a culture, correction, the manager impacts the culture every single day, whether he realizes it or not, whether he intends to or not. How he deals with people, how he answers people, how he talks to people, you know, how he delegates assignments, all those impact the culture. And if you create a culture where you're not appreciated, whatever, people are less willing to want to reach out and help you. You know, it doesn't guarantee, being civil to someone doesn't guarantee that they will, you know, do more for you, but it makes them more prone to do that. Whereas if you just treat them as an object, as an asset, that also is going to impact how they respond to you when they don't have to. So, the impact, the whole how you communicate is in many cases the way you impact the culture. You know, so that's why that typically happens, by my experience. And I've seen it over and over again over the years.
I agree. Kathy, do you have an opinion?
Well, I actually have a little story. I I went to a Bob Evans, for those of you that are in the Central Ohio area, know what Bob Evans restaurant's all about. And most of the Bob Evans have a little breakfast bar as well as tables. And so I went in there with my roommate, and he and I were sitting at the breakfast bar at one of his favorite Bob Evans restaurants. And we were just sitting there, you know, eating our breakfast and having our coffee. And the manager was a female standing off to the side, and she was clapping her hands. And she was saying, almost, I don't know if these were her exact words, I don't recall, but it was something along the line of chop, chop, come on, let's get with it. Come on, everybody, get these trays filled up. Let's get the food out. Come on, come on, come on, let's go, let's go. What's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? And finally, my roommate, he says, you're in it. That's what was wrong with it. And the servers, they'd all been rolling their eyes, you know, when they looked away from this manager, they were rolling their eyes in disgust, you know. But then when Patrick said, you're in it, was what was wrong with the picture, they tried so hard not to laugh out loud in front of that manager, because they knew that would have been disrespectful. But you could tell that they were working as hard as they could go. And she still was talking to them like that. And I don't imagine that they were working hard for their customers. They were not working hard for her.
Right.
And it was very clear. It was very clear. She would have been better off to have rolled up her sleeves and helped tray up some food for them.
Oh, definitely.
Carrie, that would have been a much better approach for her. But anyway, so that's just one example. So, yes. That's
a prime example of the words yep. you use. And yep. And if I had a manager like that, there's no way I would work extra time if I had to deal with that person.
Exactly. Yeah. Why would you go in on your day off, you know, if that's how you're going to be treated? So, yeah, I get it.
It's also the body language part. Because, for example, if the manager had walked over and was helping out and say, hey, let's go, guys, let's go. And she's doing it. Her actions, mm-hmm. remember we talked earlier, 93 or 97% of communication is not through words, but through the actions, the expressions.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, she was just clapping her hands off to the side saying, come on, come on, come on. You know, right. What's wrong with this picture?
So it presented a negative or patronizing tone versus let's get this done as a team. So she didn't connect with the folks and her actions, because she could have said the same thing if she was in her helping out. If they're slammed and they get slammed, mm-hmm. okay, guys, we got to get this done. And she's serving, she's running, she's whatever, yes. you know, it would have been, she could have said the exact same words. She could have done the exact same. Let's go, guys, let's go. But if she was doing something
right,
it would have changed the exact same thing, total different impact.
Yeah,
the communication probably you were talking about, because I've had work, you know, run facilities where let's go, guys, and I'm in there doing something with them, mm-hmm. and it's a different response, because now mm-hmm. it's, even if you don't say we're a team, you're showing you're a team versus you stand off to the side.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's once again, that is the communication piece we miss so much, so often.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, when you take what they're saying, but what they're saying and their action is someone that will pull up their sleeves, dig right into the dishes or dish or passing out the food, you know, that's a person that you want to lock arms with and get it done. I mean, it's totally the way it is. So those are great examples. I appreciate that, the thoughts. Communication goes way beyond words. In situations where feelings and attitudes are being used, what we say accounts for only 7% of what is believed. And we just shared examples with that. The way we say it it accounts for 38%. I mean, really. And what others see accounts for 55%. And so, Kathy, you're talking about the other people in the restaurant.
Everybody at the breakfast bar was watching her.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a train wreck. You couldn't take your eyes away. We weren't even talking with each other. Everybody was just watching what was going on behind the counter.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I personally, even last night, Rick and I went out to dinner and we thought we'd pick this quiet booth, right? Well, wrong. Because he was maybe 6 years old and his mom, and she was just as loud as he was while they were playing games at the table. It was so distracting. And unfortunately, the young lad had a mouth and said words I never thought I'd hear being said. But, you know, it was like Rick and I couldn't have a conversation because it was so loud and they were sitting right there. So actually, when they left, Rick says, "Do you hear that?" And I said, "What? It's quiet." So, you know, it really does have an impact on you in your surroundings. Mm-hmm. So anyways, using myself as an example for the company that I represent, I have created credibility. I share the vision of the company by my words, my confidence, and my personal belief in the company. I have been in many different types of companies during my work history, but have personally never represented any that have had the knowledge and business history or the true value of their products. I mean, you take yourself, for example. I mean, when you eat in a great restaurant, you tell everybody about it. When you buy something in the grocery store that you absolutely fell in love with, you're always sharing this. So my company, it also delivers the promise. It also delivers on the promise it offers to all their customers. So how do you know if you have connected with your audience? I never knew this, but do you have a checklist? Do you know what a checklist is for what is called a connection checklist? Well, I found this very interesting. And integrity. Did I do my best? Expectations. Did I please my sponsor? Relevance. Did I understand and relate to the audience? Value. Did I add value to the people? Application. Did I give people a game plan? Very key. And change. Did I make a difference? Think back to what I said in the beginning, is that they will remember you and how you made them feel. So who would like to share an experience with any of these? Integrity, expectations, relevance, value, application, or change? Well, go ahead, Kat. Mason?
And this is in terms of people who are working with you / for you. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, it also would deal with connecting with your audience. So you want to connect with an audience for your mastermind class that you're creating and that you want to start doing. So this connection checklist kind of lists everything from A to Z that you need to keep in mind when you are wanting to share something with your audience?
So I've run a couple different facilities over the years. One I ran in Dayton, when I walked into it, the entire process for how people did things was broken. One side of the building literally did not know what the other side of the building was doing, yet this side directly impacted this side. I mean, not kind of, directly. And I remember one day I walked up to the guy on one side. He was in a washer. This was textiles. And I talked to the guy in the washroom. I said, do you realize you impact Patty, who was way on the other side of the building, in finishing? He's like, no, I don't. Yeah, you do. No. Well, let's talk about this. The sequence you do things impacts so-and-so, who impacts so-and-so, who impacts so-and-so, and that impacts your best buddy over there, Patty. They were close friends, but he never knew he had impact or connection with him. So what I was trying to do there was I was trying to show him his importance. He had direct impact on other people. His job was important. What was he doing? He was washing clothes. He's washing uniforms, which, it's washing clothes. No. This is our business, and how you do it, the sequence you do it, where you put things impacts all along. And he did not realize that. So I was trying to show, I was trying to make a connection to him. So I recognize his importance. I wanted him to understand his importance. I want him to understand his impact. So doing that, and then I would ask the question, what do you need? You know, and literally we did some things based on, we made some, turned out to be significant changes based on a couple of little comments. You know, one thing we did was how you ran things, and literally the flip of a switch, the flip of a switch saved us double digit hours. It's like 12 hours, 12 or 13 hours. All because of a comment he made, and all I did is how I flipped a switch. It was by talking and working with the folks. This is your relevant, this is your connection, this is your impact. Showing, I wanted to show them, you know, I'm listening. So all those things combined help build a better team. And that was part of my communication process. How does my audience feel connected? Does my audience feel part of it? Do they feel valued in it? So
that's a great example, Mason. I really appreciate that, you sharing that, because people don't think of what you are communicating right there. And I was looking at the words as you were talking, and without even realizing it, you cover most of them with just that little flip of the switch. Kathy, what do you have?
Well, I have another example that I want to kind of bring to light. We've had conversations in the past about introverts and extroverts and our very personalities. And then we've also, had the conversations on how we act and what we do sometimes is more important than actually what we say. And my example is when I am part of the audience in a room full of folks where there are speakers up front, and how the speakers are connecting with their audience. And oftentimes through the presentation, you're really drawn in, and you would just feel like, oh, this person is amazing, and I'm going to buy everything they have because I just love everything about their message and who they are. But as soon as they're off stage, it's like they shut down and they almost snub the audience. And all of a sudden, a lot of those folks that were going to buy don't buy.
Yeah.
Because they got a different vibe as soon as the person was off camera. They got a different vibe from that person. And so for me, I realized that maybe that person is an introvert. Maybe it took all of the energy that they had to get up there and do their presentation. So I try to extend them the grace that I would want someone to extend to me. But I also realized that if I recognized myself as an introvert, I would need to know that I'm not done until I'm totally out of the room. I have to remain on even when I'm not on stage speaking, even if I'm just making my way through the crowd or I'm doing a book signing in the back of the room or I'm doing, and I don't know if anyone else has had that kind of an experience, but I've had several where I really felt the person was dynamic on stage, but when they came off of the stage, they almost didn't want to be bothered with the audience. And they just were not as personable or as forthcoming. And you just, you didn't, it's how they made you feel. You just didn't get that warm and fuzzy feeling because of how they were acting. And you just felt like, okay, I'm done. I'm ready to go. I got what I got out of the conference and I'm ready to leave now. And I didn't become a raving fan. And it was all because they disconnected that connection I thought they were making with the audience. So that's my example.
Well, and I'll give my example is I have met John Maxwell several times. You're part of his university or whatever. And in my experience, his never turns off. I mean, no matter what he's doing, even if he goes, you know, done with the, you know, audience afterwards when they buy all of his books that he brings with him. And and then when he's all done with that, I mean, he's still the same. He has always impressed me. And he's like Carrie to many features of John you see in Carrie.
Well, Carrie is a John Maxwell team member too.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, of course. What isn't he a member of? That always impresses me. So I appreciate the sharing of these because it helps the people that are going to watch the recording to see another view more than what I'm saying or have a clearer understanding. I know this person, Roger Ailes. He's a TV executive. He's a communication consultant. I did not know he was also a notable author, but he states, you've got 7 seconds to make the right first impression. And in business, I mean, let's face it, it'll either make you or break you. Mm-hmm. And so when you're in business, those critical 7 seconds, like I said, will either make or break you. In those vital seconds, you will respond. They will respond to your facial expressions, your gestures, your energy, and even your voice. After all, we as human beings will remember 85 to 90% of what we see. And less than 15% of what we hear. I had such a good impact and I've lost track. Sorry about that. If you want to connect with the audience, you need to be connecting on these 4 components. Connecting visually. These 5 points are very important when you're trying to connect visually. You've got to first eliminate personal distractions, like no cell phones, no computers on or TV. Expand your range of expression. Talk with your hands if you have to. And then move with a sense of purpose. If you stand still, I get bored if you stand in one place. You've got to move back and forth on the stage, or even if you're doing a presentation on Zoom, you still have to move. Maintain an open posture. In other words, you're an open book and people can see you for who you are. And pay attention to your surroundings. I mean, all 3 of us have in our background expressed how we feel, or where we are, or where we wish we were, you know? So then number 2 is connecting intellectually. There are 2 things important to know your subject and know yourself. When you find yourself, you will find your audience, definitely. And if you find the speaker's heart, the rest of him will follow. And here's the old proverb that I really like. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. How true is that? And next would be connecting emotionally. And I love this saying, and it kind of is said in different ways by people, but it's, people will not always remember what you said. They will not always remember what you did, but they will always remember how you made them feel. So like with John Maxwell, I mean, you're going to sit there and he makes you feel whole. So whatever is inside of you, I ask yourself, are you a positive person? If you're positive, believe in yourself and focus on others. Then when connecting with others, then possibly others will feel what you feel. Number four, connecting verbally. This is so key. What we say and how we say things makes an impact on our audience, whether it's young or old. We have to always talk to our audience. It makes no difference who they are. Again, this will either make you or break you. I hate to keep reminding people that, but you know, that is so, so important. As Mark Twain observed, the difference between the almost right word and the right word is a very large matter. And he uses this example, it's like the difference between the lightning bug and lightning. So it's like, you know, that sets a very visual picture. Finally, I'm going to end with this. Finally, the best professional speakers know themselves as well as their strengths. They have to keep that in mind. When they learn to use them to their advantage, must do this. So I want to thank you all very much for being with here. I don't think this was too short. I think I covered the key points. And so, who has any questions or who has any comments or follow-ups to what I've talked about?
Well, it just makes me realize that I need to keep all of this in mind, especially as I'm teaching and coaching and doing some public speaking, because it's so important. And I think oftentimes when we're out there, we see what it is we like. We know how people make us feel, and we know what it is like. For example, if I were ever to work in a corporate environment, I wouldn't be the lady behind the Bob Evans counter clapping my hands saying, what's wrong with this picture? I'd be afraid there'd be a Patrick watching me that would call me out, you know? So anyway, I think just over time, we know what we like. And so we kind of move more into that type of style ourselves when we're up there talking. But for me, one of the biggest things, and this just kind of sums it all up, when I had to speak about a year ago down in Miami, and that event's coming up again here in April, I was a little nervous. And so I went to my business coach at the time and I said, I'm just a little nervous. I haven't talked in front of a larger group for a long time. I've just been doing a lot of Zoom calls all through the pandemic and haven't been actually on stage. You know, what can you give me? What you got? And she said, here's what I'm going to tell you. She said, get out of your head and into your heart. That's all you have to remember. And she said, and you'll connect.
Thank you, Kathy. That's really good. And you're talking about Wendy Bloom, correct?
Yes. Wendy Bloom Weiss. She said, get out of your head and get into your heart. And she said, and then go on stage.
Yeah. For some, that's going to be nerve-wracking. but for the most part.
That kind of sums it up, though. That kind of just sums up everything you need to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mason, do you have anything?
Well, I guess I make it a little, I mean, basically, I agree with what Kathy's saying. For me, when I speak, I'm comfortable talking one or two people. So when I'm up in front of an audience, now, whether that's on a stage, whether that's in front of a group at work, I always, in my mind, pick one or two people. That's who I'm talking to. I don't sit there and stare at them because that's creepy, but I'm actually watching one or two people as if that's who I'm talking to, and I'm gauging their reactions. That's how I put myself at ease to be more comfortable talking and trying to communicate, because I'm looking for one or two people to gauge, you know, how am I doing? If I see that lost look, then I can ask them. It's no different than I'm asking. It's not like I'm saying, okay, group, what do you think? I can ask a specific question. So
yeah,
that's how I do to ease myself trying to talk to people.
That's a great tool, Mason. That's a great tool.
Because if you see somebody that's lost in the woods, so to speak, you can help them maybe come back out of the woods by sharing with you how they're feeling or what question they have. I mean, I know for myself that, but I sit there and I'll say, no, don't pick on me. Don't pick on me. And how many people do that? But you know, once you break that, that stigmatism, I think that's the correct word I want to use. Here's my truth. The reason I'm doing this is because I want to get comfortable with talking, having the key things in my talk. And honestly, from January to this month, I've changed things in what I do. And I suddenly realized, you know, I just can't do a little bit of notes here and a little bit of notes there. I have to physically, for me, to keep myself straight, I typed it out. I typed it out so that I know where I was going to go, how I was going to say it, and not fumble. I hate fumbling. And,
Well, sir, the nice thing is, though, you didn't glue yourself to those notes.
Right.
I've seen that. And I used to do that, and it made me too rigid. So you develop your own style, because I did not know you had such detailed notes. That's a compliment thing. I'll give you a real world example. Years ago as a consultant, we had to give briefings each month to our partners. We rotated. The partner in charge did not like me. I'm not guessing he stated that. We just butted heads. It was one of his guys getting up there, and I had to get up there. His guy got up there and had a hugely detailed briefing and had detailed notes like what you just showed, and here's what he did. And he read them the whole time. That's it. No connection. And he's done. Questions? He walked away. I don't like doing that. I do prep like you do, but then I'll take a few small cards because that I need, and I use them as a security blanket. And I will bumble. I will make a mistake. And I know this. But when I'm talking, I've got the slides. I'll point those out. And I'm looking at the audience. I'm trying to interact. Now, in terms of data, the other guy's briefing, much more complete, much more detailed. But he had no connection with his audience. Whereas mine, it was good. I mean, it wasn't a bad thing, but it wasn't nearly as complete as his. But my style was, I want to connect with the person. And like I said, you had all these detailed notes. I did not know that because you kept talking to us. Mm-hmm. And even the partner had to admit, said, you know what? You did better than he did because of trying to make that connection with your audience. That makes the difference. But it does come down to knowing yourself and knowing what you're comfortable with, because I have made the other mistakes, and you try and recognize that and admit that, you know, to yourself. So.
Right. Well, and I agree with everything you're saying, Mason, because, and the important thing is to know your material. Like, yes. like Kathy said, I've got to remember to do this. Well, some of these things that he wrote in this chapter, I had no clue. I mean, it was like very, very eye-opening for me. And then you sit here and think after reading the chapter, what don't I do? What do I do? And so you're out to correct yourself. And sometimes it's nicer and easier to correct yourself and understand it than having somebody else say, you know, you shouldn't have done that, or you shouldn't have said that. And so, like Mason, I talk with my hands.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Yeah, that's a good thing.
I feel more comfortable this month.
You appeared a lot more comfortable. And so that was one of the reasons when we did this particular exercise for everybody to practice doing, you know, a 5-session of something, I chose the John Maxwell book, because not only are you facilitating the material, but it's also something we can all benefit from.
And it's interesting how all of us so far that have facilitated have put their own twist on it, brought out their important points to talk about. And, you know, that's really fascinating to see, even though we're talking the same chapter, we're all different. And that's very encouraging for me to know that when I want to talk or speak or whatever, it's my story. It's what I want to say. And that's really a lot of what people just don't understand. They figure they have to, like Mason said, read the paper and, you know, blah, 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 and he was done. And you know, and thank you, Mason. And thank you, Kathy, very much for these kind words. I really, really appreciate it.
Debbie, I think you are ready to put some of your own material together, be thinking about what you would like to do. And it doesn't have to be 5. If you want to just do a couple of sessions, if that's what your material will support, it's whatever you want to do to kind of start practicing your own material.
Okay. I feel a lot more confident than I did even in January.
Okay. That's the whole
thing. Thank you.
That's the whole purpose. Yes. I love it.
So I thank everybody for coming today or watching the recording. And next month, we will be talking about chapter 4, which is connecting always requires energy. Well, I don't think any of us lack the energy for presenting or connecting with anybody. So that'll be a great review for all of us.
Absolutely. Debbie, thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
And so I am going to go ahead and stop the recording, and we'll see everyone next month when Debbie facilitates her 4th session. So join us next month, same time, same
show. Bye, everyone.
Take care.